It's now 2 o'clock, and this is Captain Rick reporting. I'll be reading from the Wednesday, November 28th edition of the Decatur Herald and Review. The first article is entitled, Giving Back, Paying Forward. After Thanksgiving, Decatur turns out to help out nonprofits, by Jalen Cook. Decatur. Frigid temperatures and flurries might have provided a good reason to stay home Tuesday, but the cold didn't bother community members who banded together for the sake of helping others. First United Methodist Church hosted its annual Giving Tuesday event in the lower level of its home at 201 West North Street. Representatives of various local nonprofit agencies and organizations set up tables in the room for people to visit and learn more about how they could assist in their various missions. It's great, said Emily Kapper, a case manager for Growing Strong Sexual Assault Center. It's always an uplifting, fun event. Growing Strong assists those affected by sexual assault with 24-hour crisis counseling, mental health support, and several other services. Traditionally, held on the Tuesday after Thanksgiving, Giving Tuesday is meant to serve as a follow-up to the commercialized nature of retail holidays like Black Friday by encouraging participants to support nonprofit agencies and services either through monetary donations or volunteer work. The movement was founded by New York's 92nd Street Y and the United Nations Foundation. In Illinois, an online campaign called #ILGive also helped nonprofits share their message and collect donations for Giving Tuesday. First United Methodist Church has hosted its Giving Tuesday event since 2014. Jennifer Horton Motter, the church's director of Children and Family Ministries, said this year's event featured 33 participating local organizations, including Baby Talk, the Child First Center, the Water Street Mission, Northeast Community Fund, and the Brick House Foundation, among others. It's the largest number that we've had so far, she said. Each year, we continue having more and more. Hart and Motter compared the church's annual Giving Tuesday event to a bazaar or a shopping mall of charities due to the varied nature of its participating organizations and the event's loose informal structure. From 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. and 4 p.m. to 6 p.m., agency representatives were available to answer questions, accept donations, and to initiate the first steps of potential partnerships with those interested in lending a hand. The church itself doesn't collect any money during its Giving Tuesday event, Hart and Motter said, and it's all about providing a chance for community members to find out how they can work to make the city better, she said. I think that Decatur has showed that we are a generous people, Hart and Motter said. The event is a lot of fun. There's so much wonderful energy, and I'm always so touched at how supportive the community is. Macon County CASA, which trains and supports volunteers who want to become court-appointed special advocates for children in the welfare system, has been a part of the church's Giving Tuesday event since the beginning. Julia Roundtree Livingston, Macon County CASA's Director of Development and incoming Executive Director, said that the event is proof that Decatur residents are always willing to give to various causes and are willing to find out how they can do so in a moment's notice. Rachel Barter and Caleb Brown of Macon Resources Incorporated feel the same. They also said, a strength of events like Giving Tuesday is that it helps shine a light on how the various participating organizations serve the community. While known for being a manufacturer of Illinois license plates, Macon Resources provides several services that benefit adults and children who have been diagnosed with cognitive, intellectual, or developmental disabilities. We wouldn't be able to have our doors open if it weren't for generous donors in the area. So awareness is everything, said Barter, Public Relations and Development Manager for Macon Resources. We've grown so much over the years just because of educating people about what we are, she said. About Giving Tuesday, how it started. The 92nd Street Y in New York City is credited for launching Giving Tuesday in 2012. The impact. Last year it raised more than $300 million for charities around the world in a single day. The next article is about city government. It's entitled Council Eyes 2019 Budget by Tom Lisi, Decatur. City leaders today will field questions from the public about the upcoming year's balanced budget proposal, which holds the line on taxes in part by keeping staffing levels low before the council votes on the plan in December. A public hearing on the plan is set for 4 p.m. in the council chambers on the third floor of the Decatur Civic Center, 1 Gary K. Anderson Plaza. Here are five things to know about what's planned. Number one, it's pretty austere. The 114-page budget document says that revenue in the general fund for the year will total $68 million, about 3% more than in 2018. Expenses are also projected to be $68 million, also up 3%. Interim City Manager Billy Tyus described the budget to council members and the public last week as austere, mainly because it holds the line on growing costs facing the community. That includes growing debt service payments, pension contributions, and salary raises for employees to cost of materials to do public works project, like street paving. A lot of work is getting done this year, but there aren't a lot of extras, he said. This budget is not a permanent fix, Tyus said, but it allows the city to go forward on various infrastructure projects and maintain services while staff and the council come up with solutions. Number two, council balked at raising property taxes. Council members and the interim city manager acknowledged in their budget discussions last week that city staff first came to them with a budget proposal that would deal with staffing levels and rising costs by raising the property tax levy. Tyus said the overall message he got from the council was that the public was against a property tax increase. Councilwoman Dana Ray called the prospect of raising the city's tax levy, which last year accounted for about 15% of property tax bills, political suicide. But council members David Horn and Chuck Kuhl said they worried keeping the property tax levy flat for several years would lead to the council in the future needing to approve a drastic increase all in one year. Tyus said that's a year's time that would give staff an opportunity to work through some of the changes that we need to make in the next year in order to hopefully get to the point where there wouldn't be a need for a sizable tax increase. Three incumbents are running for re-election in April: Mayor Julie Wolf Moore, Councilwoman Lisa Gregory, and Councilman Bill Faber. The budget would require four of the seven council members to approve. Number three, fewer city employees. The city left 39 full-time positions unfilled after staff left through retirements and attrition. Tyus said the city is keeping up the same level of services, something he has said was unsustainable in the past. Our staff has done a yeoman's job of doing more without an additional salary. It's part of what we need to think about going forward, Tyus said. Gregory and Ray stressed that budget constraints mean that the city needs to explore finding new computer software and technology-based services that lessen the need for more personnel. There are some things that we can do as a city to be more efficient than that we haven't done because we haven't been forced to do it, Ray said. Let's force ourselves to be more efficient. Number four, a return to demolitions. City officials kicked off a wide-ranging neighborhood revitalization initiative last year, including a number of meetings with resident volunteers and a presentation on possible programs. Leaders outlined potential steps to the council in June, and Tyus told the council last week planning has continued behind the scenes. However, the schedule to introduce major items for the council to approve has fallen behind after he moved from deputy manager to interim city manager. The deputy manager position is currently vacant. But Tyus said a contract to demolish 9 homes will come forward before the end of the year, and a larger plan to demolish an additional 20 homes would be ready by February. Soon, council members will be able to move forward on city purchase of 700 abandoned lots under the trust of county officials. After years, several years of dwindling spending on home demolitions, the 2019 budget proposes spending nearly $800,000 for the effort. This year so far, the city has spent just $31,115. Number five, tough decisions ahead. It's unclear when exactly a new permanent city manager will come on board, but he or she will likely be tasked with guiding difficult and politically unpopular decisions almost immediately. After former city manager Tim Gleason left Decatur to take the same position in Bloomington, council members appointed Tyus to the interim role and hired a consulting firm, GOVHR USA, to conduct a search. Tyus said last month that he would not apply for the job on a permanent basis, citing family considerations. The deadline for job applications for the position was October 19th. In a recruitment brochure put out by GovHR USA, the average salary for the city manager position is listed as $175,000 to $190,000, depending on qualifications and experience. If the city council approves a 2019 budget as it stands, the city will continue operating under tight margins, carrying out the same services with fewer people to do it. ADM to eliminate IT jobs. Unspecified number of jobs affected, including local ones. By Allison Petty. Decatur. Archer Daniels Midland Company plans to eliminate an unspecified number of information technology jobs and shift those duties to an India-based company. Company spokesperson Jackie Anderson confirmed in a statement that some employees were told several weeks ago that positions would be eliminated after a transition period of several months. Anderson said ADM plans to work closely with employees to help them find other jobs, either within ADM or the new firm, Tata Consulting Services, TCS. It's unclear how many positions will be affected, but Anderson confirmed some were located in Decatur. ADM plans to contract with TCS, which is headquartered in Mumbai, but says it has more than 380,000 employees in 55 countries. Our priority during this process is the respect and care of our employees, and we are taking great lengths to minimize the total workforce impact to ADM, Anderson said. She described the shift as part of a strategic change to the company's IT organization to stress high-value areas such as architecture and innovation. This transformation will create jobs in some parts of the IT organization, but it will also result in many foundational services being handled by our newly retained outside partner, she said. Chicago-based ADM has about 31,000 global employees. Decatur is the North American headquarters, with about 4,000 workers and oilseed and corn processing. The company, in early November, reported third quarter net income of $536 million and revenue of $15.8 billion. Last week, Governor-elect J.B. Pritzker named ADM CEO Juan Luciano to serve as an advisor during his transition period. He will be on the Growing Our Agricultural Economy Committee. Coroner, second Decatur crash victim dies, by Allison Petty, Springfield. A 27-year-old man is the second Decatur resident to die from injuries suffered in a single vehicle crash on eastbound Interstate 72 early Saturday morning, the Sangamon County Coroner's Office said Tuesday. Sangamon County Coroner Cinda Edwards said Paris Matthew Williams died at HSHS St. John's Hospital at 7:18 p.m. Monday. He was the driver in the crash, which was just east of Springfield. The coroner previously said Marche Robinson, a 29-year-old Decatur woman, died at the scene. Robinson was a passenger in the vehicle. The Illinois State Police said in a statement that the eastbound vehicle, a 2005 Chevy Malibu, drove off the right side of the roadway, spun 180 degrees, and struck a tree at about 3:15 a.m. Saturday, according to preliminary investigations. A 22-year-old female passenger, also from Decatur, was taken to an area hospital and treated for serious injuries, police said. The investigation into the circumstances of the crash is continuing. Speaking Tuesday night, Marche Robinson's family told the Herald and Review they were pulling together to cope with their grief and making preparations to help and care for Robinson's children, a girl, 9, and an 8-year-old son. Reggie Joshua, Robinson's brother, has details on a GoFundMe account set up on his Facebook page, and that money will be used to help with expenses. The children are being cared for by Robinson's 52-year-old mother, Marcia Ligon, who also lives in Decatur. Aside from her children, Joshua said Robinson leaves behind two other brothers, a sister, and her 55-year-old father, Walter Robinson Sr. Joshua stressed again that they were all doing their best to help each other get through this tragedy and comfort his late sister's children. He was full of praise for Robinson, whom he said worked hard as a forklift driver to support her family and had a personality that made her a delight to be around. She was a very hard-working woman, smart, and everybody that met her loved her, said Joshua, 34, who lives in St. Louis. She was just very friendly, a very outgoing personality, and always happy. Joshua said the family doesn't know much about the accident that claimed her life. They understood she was coming home after a night out in Springfield. Her funeral arrangements are being taken care of by Walker Funeral Service. Viewing will be from 11 a.m. until noon, December 8th, at the Church of Jesus Christ, 125 South Shores Drive, with the funeral beginning at noon. The funeral will be open to the public. Robbery charges dropped against man, by Tony Reed, Decatur. The armed robbery case against Decatur man Keith B. Cunningham collapsed after the victim, the only witness, disappeared and can't be found. State's Attorney Jay Scott said Tuesday that investigators with his office had tried to locate the 22-year-old woman but came up empty. And we were given information that she might have left the state, said Scott. The armed robbery charge against Cunningham was formally dismissed at a hearing in Macon County Circuit Court on November 13th. But the case was dismissed without prejudice, which means it could be refiled at a future date. And if she, the victim, shows up, we will take a look at it again, added Scott. Cunningham had consistently denied the charge, which said he robbed the woman, a friend, after being invited to her home for a visit August 6th. A Decatur police sworn affidavit said he had pulled a semi-automatic handgun on the woman while standing in her kitchen, pointed the weapon at her, and demanded money. Police said he then fled the scene with $300. Officers said they found him using Facebook information, including messages to and from the victim. Legionnaires' crisis is at the heart of veto override, by John O'Connor of the Associated Press, Springfield. People who are harmed or injured in incidents that are the state government's fault will be eligible for damages awarded as much as $2 million after the state House voted to override a veto by Governor Bruce Rauner Tuesday. The House voted 71-36 to override a veto on legislation raising the damage cap in the Illinois Court of Claims from $100,000. The override vote put the law into effect. The deadly outbreak of Legionnaires' disease at the Quincy Veterans Home inspired Representative Al Riley, a Democrat from Olympia Fields, to sponsor the measure. The waterborne fluid malady has led to the deaths of 14 people since 2015. Families of several victims filed lawsuits. Rauner's critics claim the administration was slow to act in limiting the crisis, which ultimately led to plans to rebuild the entire Quincy campus. Objections to the override of Governor Bruce Rauner's amendatory veto, which would have capped awards at $300,000, prompted a dust up over the Legionnaires' disease, a flashpoint among Democrats and Republicans for nearly a year. Republican Representative Peter Breen of Lombard complained that the bulk of damage awards would go to trial lawyers representing victims instead of to education or fixing roads. Representative Stephanie Kifowit, an Oswego Democrat, responded, saying she would like to make a broth of Legionella and pump it into the water system of his, Breen's, loved ones, so they can be infected, they can be mistreated. Legionella is a waterborne bacteria which, when inhaled, can cause the sometimes fatal flu-like malady of Legionnaires. Representative Jean Ives, a Republican from Wheaton, exculpated Kifowit, denouncing Democrats who wish death on Republicans. Kifowit later stood and complained her statement was mischaracterized and that she had said, imagine if Legionella was in Breen's water supply. Lawsuits against the state go through the Court of Claims. Damage awards have been limited to $100,000 since the early 1970s. Riley said many other states have caps of $2 million. The legislature returns Wednesday for two more days of its fall session. In between the articles is a picture of a smiling little girl being framed inside a picture frame held by an adult. At the top, there's a, kind of like a starburst that says, Super Kids for St. Jude. At the bottom are images of what appear to be Superboy and Wonder Girl. There are streamers in the back, blue, red, and yellow. And then there's a sign that says Super Kids Photo Booth with a picture of a bowl of soup. The caption reads, Super Kids, Olive Dunker, 7, poses at a photo booth Tuesday at the University Commons Banquet Room on the campus of Millikan University. The fundraiser is a project by a marketing class entitled Marketing and Event Planning, taught by Marilyn Davis. Davis teaches the students to plan, execute, sell, and overall manage a major event. The Super Kids fundraiser for St. Jude's featured performances by students and a message from Andrea Dunker. Dunker shared their St. Jude journey about her daughter, Olive Dunker, who is pictured here, being a former patient diagnosed with, and I'll take a shot at pronouncing this word correctly, it's a long one, rhabdomyosarcoma cancer over 4 years ago. Now, some Decatur news briefs. Second stained glass window damaged, Decatur. A stained glass window in another Decatur church has fallen victim to criminal damage, according to Decatur police. Detective Sergeant Chris Copeland said a brick was thrown through the window of the Renaissance Church, 456 North Water Street, between 2 p.m. Sunday and 6 a.m. Saturday and 6 a.m. Sunday. The repair bill is estimated at more than $500. This incident follows on from a similar damage done sometime between November 13th and November 14th to a stained glass window in St. John's Episcopal Church, 130 West El Dorado Street. The window and an outer storm window were broken, leaving a damage bill the church expected would cost more than $700 to fix. We don't know whether this incident is related to the other one, Copeland said. Man trying to stop liaison in driveway punched. Decatur. Police said a Decatur man who tried to stop two men from having sex in a car parked in his driveway was repeatedly punched in the face early Saturday. A sworn affidavit from Decatur Police Officer Jeremy Williams said the incident happened in Hyde Park Court on the south edge of Decatur, off of US 51, just before 3:30 a.m. Williams said the 26-year-old victim, who was described as a friend of the alleged assailant, had been asked to intervene and stop the sexual activity by the owner of the driveway where the car was parked. The homeowner of the residence did not like the fact that this was occurring in his driveway and advised the victim to notify his friend and the friend's partner to leave the property, Williams said. Williams said the 21-year-old assailant then became irate before punching the victim in the head 4 times, leaving him with redness, swelling, and bruising injuries, police recorded with photographs. The man was booked on preliminary charges of battery and is free after posting $1,000 bond. Water heaters stolen from apartments, Decatur. Two water heaters valued at $1,100 each have been stolen from two vacant apartments in the 600 and 700 blocks of East Grand Avenue in Decatur, according to police reports. Detective Sergeant Chris Copeland said the heaters were both taken between November 12th and November 26th, when the burglaries were reported. Wabash Crossing is listed as the owner of the apartments, and a property manager said she had no comment on the crime when reached Tuesday. And that's the end of part one of the Wednesday, November 28th edition of the Decatur Herald and Review. This has been Captain Rick reporting. I'll be back with part two after the break.